Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns. And today on the show, it is a listener mailbag episode. You guys submitted your questions on Instagram, Blue Sky, Twitter, Threads. And I've rounded up most, if not all, of the questions. I think I got to all of them. But you guys had some great questions. We're going to talk about Beverly Hills, Atlanta, Southern Charm, Summer House, some of the upcoming shows like Vanderpump Villa, the Vanderpump Rules reboot, Miami, and then some other fun sort of bigger questions at the end. You know, the first question is about Atlanta. And obviously on Sunday night, we got the episode that shows what Kenya did at her hair spa launch event. And obviously we should talk about it a little bit up top here because also the first question is about that. So, you know, ultimately, I wish that both Brit and Kenya had been reprimanded for their actions. I think that at this day and age, bringing up your guns while in the midst of an argument with somebody on a show like this is pretty unacceptable. And I think that Brit should have been somehow reprimanded for that in some shape or form, even if it was to like be put on watch. You know what I mean? Even if it wasn't like a full suspension, even though I just think that like when you compare bringing up guns to what Kenya did, it's hard to compare them, but it's hard also to stomach Kenya's suspension with knowing that Brit never really got reprimanded from what we know about. Maybe there was something. We have not heard about any of that. That being said, I'm also landing in this place of like, after we saw that episode, it's like, damn, Kenya did not have to do all that. She didn't. And yes, she had every right to retaliate in some form to Brit's comments about her pistols. And she also had every right to feel quote unquote unsafe and not protected by production, which is what she has both said outright and insinuated a lot in the months since this happened. She has every right to feel that way. But at the same time, I don't think that Brit was actually threatening to like shoot her. You know what I mean? She brought up her pistols and she mentioned them. And I'm not trying to downplay the comments that she made, because as you know from the past couple episodes, I feel strongly about this. And I think that there was a way for Kenya to retaliate and to punish Brit from her perspective without doing what she did. And somebody has pointed out also that Brit's comments were in the heat of the moment, and that doesn't take away from them, but it makes it different from premeditating what Kenya did. Kenya had to go through the process of getting those poster boards, finding the pictures, printing them out, typing out who is this hoe on that first slide. She had a lot of planning in that. And one of the things that I'm thinking about is like, there was a way for her to, again, punish Brit she iced her out at the event. She didn't disinvite her. She came. She brought flowers. She didn't acknowledge her one bit. She ignored her completely, which is paying her dust, which is what Kenya said she was going to do. And then Brit left. She was like, well, fuck, what am I doing here? Like, she took herself out of the equation. She was ignored so much that she didn't want to be there. And that's a great way to treat this if you're Kenya. Rise above it. You're the vet here. Like, you know what flies. And you know that this is your show in a lot of ways. That this is your territory. Brit's new here. Show her who's boss. Pay her dust. Celebrate your opening and move along. Ignore her for the rest of the season. Refuse to do a sit down with her, you know? Because I do think that Brit was trying to get her apology to Kenya accepted way too quickly. And flowers were not going to be enough. Actions really have to show that. But Kenya, to say that what Brit did called for Kenya to do these poster boards and to print out pornographic photos of her to show to a group of unsuspecting, innocent people at this party that she was hosting for her salon, that it merited that? No, it didn't. It didn't. You can ignore the fact that I think in some places it's actually legal to show people naked photos of people without their consent to see those photos. But also it's just sort of like, ugh. I agree with so many people who have said that Kenya is above this. This behavior is beneath her. And I think that she has since admitted that. She's done a couple interviews, the Tamron Hall interview, the Shade Room interview. She has acknowledged that. So I'm not saying anything new there. But it's just disappointing. Kenya didn't have to do all that. She did not. And she says she's going to pay her Brit dust. And then she goes on to not pay her dust. She goes on to make her entire speech at her big hair spa moment that she's been working years for, invested so much money in, dedicated to her daughter. She takes that entire moment to talk about Brit. And I know that she feels strongly about it, and she is passionate about defending herself, and she always has been that way. And that's valid, and she should feel that way. But she ruined her own moment She let this overshadow her own big moment. That was this beautiful unveiling of her salon. And it was such a happy, supportive moment, it seemed, up until that point. A couple things that I thought were interesting. I thought that it was really, I think, and I know this is controversial, I guess, that Cynthia was being a really good friend by going up to Kenya before she left. And she was like, hey, I'll call you tomorrow. But like, that wasn't cool. That's not you. That's not the Kenya I know. This is beneath you. You shouldn't have done that. I don't agree with this. I think it was great that she said that. Because to me, part of what's wrapped up in Kenya doing this is that clearly there are people that helped her bring this moment to fruition that were around her saying yes. Yes people, as I like to call them. People who were too afraid to tell her no, who just gas her up. It's good to have somebody around you who will tell you no, who will give you the hard truth, who will push back on an idea like this and be like, Kenya, this is not going to go over well. So having somebody like a Cynthia there ahead of time would have been nice for Kenya. And I know that some people view Cynthia's moment as her taking the opportunity to jump off the bandwagon, to distance herself from Kenya right away. And that's part of it, sure. But I don't think the intention's bad on Cynthia's part. I think the intention from Cynthia really is to tell Kenya what she should hear. And also, you know, we know now that Cynthia and Kenya have not really spoken since this point, which I think was last June. And again, you can take that two ways. I kind of view that as Kenya icing Cynthia out and because she didn't blindly back her, that she because she did criticize her. And again, condemning a friend's ill-advised actions does not make you a bad friend. That actually makes you a good friend in my mind. Could Cynthia have reached out a little bit more? Probably, if their friendship is as strong as maybe we thought it was. But I don't think it's like, I don't think Kenya's calling Cynthia and she's ignoring her calls. That's my read on it. My read on it is that they're kind of mutually distancing themselves from one another for right now. And also people pointed out, you know, if Phaedra can come back to the show, why can't Kenya? Absolutely valid. I think that the wording at the end of the episode, which said that Bravo decided to cease filming with Kenya for the season, it didn't say she was fired. It didn't say she was no longer going to ever be on the show. I think that leaves the door open, whether that's for next season or, you know, further down the line. I don't know. But I think the door seems to be open. Even the way that Andy was talking about how beautiful her salon is, he kept mentioning that. Like, it seemed to me that they're unsure sort of what to do. And I think part of it is like, okay, how is Kenya going to handle this? Is she going to go public and do a big interview somewhere and trash the network? And it doesn't seem like that's her move. She's been pretty restrained and kind of cryptic even, but she has sort of insinuated that she will speak her mind at some point. I think that Kenya can come back. And I think that comparing it to Phaedra right away, that was tough because Phaedra was off the show for years and years and years. She was punished. She was fired from the show. And she did her time, if you want to say it that way. And now she's coming back as sort of a replacement for Kenya, which is kind of ironic. And we'll see. I mean, I love Kenya. I'm rooting for her still. I've been rooting for her through this whole thing. But you can root for somebody and still acknowledge that they fucked up. And I think that Kenya fucked up. And I think that her being suspended from filming because of doing this was merited in a lot of ways. I wish that she could have been brought back. But That's not how the cookie crumbled. And yet again, I do think that Britt and Kenya should have both been reprimanded. It shouldn't have just been Kenya. It shouldn't have been. But a lot of people view it as Kenya sort of being hung out to dry by production, and production had to have known about this. And it's hard to imagine that production didn't see those poster boards being brought into the room and wonder what those were, or see her working on them upstairs. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah, I guess you can argue, like, why didn't somebody from production step in and be like, Kenya, don't do this? It's almost like they wanted her to self-sabotage. Also, is that production's job to intervene in that way? I don't know. That's something you can argue, I guess. And another thing that I've seen making the rounds this morning after the episode aired was there's a clip from, I forget exactly what season it was, but when Kenya and Phaedra were feuding, Kenya was packing for a trip and she literally was like, do I need to bring my gun? And she showed her gun on camera. So, you know, and I guess she was not reprimanded for that, which is, I mean, she showed her gun and it was a dark joke. She wasn't being serious. I don't know. And again, the times change too. I think that moment probably landed very differently back when it aired versus how Britt's moment aired now in the climate that we're in. And again, as we've seen, Bravo has been pretty good with adapting to the times. And I'm just surprised that Britt didn't get any sort of again, punishment after that. But again, we've seen it. It was hard to watch. I'm still rooting for Kenya. I wish that Britt could have also, you know, been reprimanded. But I think Kenya decided to do this. This was kind of self-sabotage and she should have known better. And I hope that we see her back, but that's where I'm landing right now. All right, so the first question, Mohammed Yassin Alvi on Twitter asked, what are your thoughts on Kenya's story being told by other cast members? So this to me is like almost like the biggest shame of the whole thing. And I don't understand or agree with the decision not to show Kenya's confessionals up until episode 5 this season. To me, that punishes actually the audience more than anything, in my opinion. I think it takes away from the show a little bit. And again, I've been loving season 16, but we're not getting the full story by not getting Kenya confessionals, by not getting some of her solo scenes. And I think that's unfortunate. And I think that I don't understand. I understand ceasing filming with her, but what about before that? And maybe they ceased filming with her before they even started filming confessionals, and that's probably why, like, the confessionals don't exist. But maybe they should exist. Maybe they should have sat with her one time. But I don't know how that would have worked if she was suspended and then quit. So that's the likely explanation. But I think it's unfortunate that Kenya's story is not being told by her. And I just think that we're missing an explanation in a lot of ways. Like, or why can't Kenya do a sit down with Andy, you know? But ultimately, I feel like Kenya is in this place where she's kind of hopeful that she could be brought back. I don't think that she sees the relationship with Bravo as being completely broken. And I think that honestly, Nini, what happened with Nini is a cautionary tale. And so that's probably why Kenya's been a little bit more restrained and not going full force and telling her side of it. But yeah, it sucks. It sucks that Kenya's story is being told by other people.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight Loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
How many discounts does USAA auto insurance offer? Too many to say here. Multi-vehicle discount, safe driver discount, new vehicle discount, storage discount, legacy.
How many discounts will you stack up? Tap the banner or visit usaa.com/autodiscounts. Restrictions apply.
LifeLock, how can I help?
The IRS said I filed my return,
but I haven't.
1 in 4 taxpaying Americans has paid the price of identity fraud.
What do I do?
My refund, though.
I'm freaking out.
Don't worry, I can fix this.
LifeLock fixes identity theft guaranteed and gets your money back with up to $3 million in coverage.
I'm so relieved.
No problem. I'll be with you every step of the way.
1 in 4 was a fraud-paying American. Not anymore. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
Okay, so now we have a lot of questions about the future of Beverly Hills. So Cray Cray 24 on Blue Sky asks, do you think Erica should get another season on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills? She hasn't had much of a storyline in the past couple of years past the Girardi debacle. Do you think she is willing to reveal more about her life? And are the viewers even interested? Relatedly, Xavier Andrews on Threads asks, what is your ideal but practical cast for RHOBH next season? Nick Cagliano asks, do one of the remaining Fox 4, 5, now 4, actually now 3, need to exit Beverly Hills for a true dynamic shift? Paul Kabak, how should they shake up Real Housewives of Beverly Hills next season? I'm Julie P on Instagram. Where does Real Housewives of Beverly Hills go from here? Who should stay and go? Fill it up. Similarly asked, is Garcelle overrated? She wasn't quick on her feet when confronted and couldn't take the heat. All right, let's tackle that last one first. No, I do not think that Garcelle is overrated. Not every housewife needs to be super quick on her feet in the moment, and not everybody can take the heat. I think there's a lot of different kinds of people and a lot of different kinds of cast members on these shows. I think Garcelle brought a lot of industry gravitas and star power to the show. I think that she was a forebearer on this show because she was the first Black cast member. She asked a lot of questions that we as the audience wanted answers to, and she was often that audience surrogate, which is a very, very important role on an ensemble show like this. She was amazing at confessionals, and I think that she had really solid feuds with multiple women. So I think Garcelle was not overrated. I think she brought a lot to the show. I think there were moments where perhaps, like, because she was such a fan favorite, maybe she could have been criticized more for certain things that she said or did. But I think that's kind of all coming out on this reunion, which is clearly a lot of heat on her. And that being said, speaking of the reunion, I do wish that Garcelle, speaking of like not being quick in the moment, I wish that she had kept those strong words for Erica on stage instead of in her dressing room. You know, at the end of part one of the reunion, we see her kind of going off about Erica, and she's like, you know, she's like, fuck you, Erica. Like, I'm not interesting because I don't have criminal activity. And that's the kind of shit that I would have loved to have seen from Garcelle in the moment, especially on this reunion. But maybe that's just not her style, you know? But I definitely agree that there are moments where maybe she could have popped off more in the moment. But I also think that she has more to consider when it comes to popping off like that. And then speaking of the future of the show, I do think Erica should get another season. In fact, I personally, maybe this is unpopular, but I think Erica had a great season until the end when she has been going so hard at Garcelle and Sutton. But I really enjoyed Erica this season. I thought she was, it was kind of a return to form for her in many ways. Yeah, she doesn't have that much of a personal storyline going on beyond, like, again, redoing her house and featuring her wallpaper. But, like, she brought it in group scenes, I think. And I think that she was a really important connective tissue with the Dorit and Kyle of it all. I mean, I think Erica's an amazing housewife. And I know that she's polarizing. And she also did rightfully lose a lot of goodwill with some of her recent comments, like calling Garcelle uninteresting and her Watch What Happens Live appearance alongside Bose. But I also appreciate that Erica is not afraid to be controversial and go against the grain and speak her truth, because too many housewives are afraid to do that these days. So it's really important to hang on to those women and also not to bully them online into getting in line. Do you know what I mean? Like, just because you don't like Erica or disagree with how she's handling things, like, you have to, sometimes I wish that some of them, that more of the fandom would take a step back and just, like, remember that, like, and I did an episode on this last year around the Tamra Judge stuff on Real Housewives of Orange County about, like, how the art of sort of respecting your villain is being lost in reality TV and Housewives in recent years, because people in some ways sort of moralize reality TV and they want people to be perfect people. And it's like, well, without these villains who aren't afraid to strike the match and, again, go against the grain and maybe say an unpopular opinion, we wouldn't get conflict. We wouldn't get nearly as much conflict on Housewives. And so Erica's really important for that reason, especially on a show like Beverly Hills, where there is much more talking behind the backs, talking in confessionals, kind of not being as open to confrontation. And I think Erica is important for that reason. And then I think next season, she should come back and she should show us her dating life, especially given all of this criticism that she has for Garcelle for not showing hers. I think that would be the wisest move for Erica. And that's what I hope we see. And then in terms of next season more broadly, I do think that it would be wise to have Kyle Richards take a break. I like Kyle a lot, but I think that she is in dire need of breathing room. I think she's in dire need to touch grass. I think she needs to get out of this bubble of the show that she's been in for 15 years. I think that's really important for her. I think it would give her perspective. I think it would give her an opportunity to really focus on making big decisions in her life, whether that is filing for divorce or kind of getting at a better place with where her and Mauricio are, whether it is figuring out how she wants to handle her relationship with Morgan publicly. Because I think part of the problem is that she's been go for so long that it's like, I think that Kyle maybe is one of those people who needs a little bit more space to make a big decision like that and to really reflect in that way. And so I think Kyle and the show would both benefit from that. And then with her out of there, it breaks up the dynamic in a really big way. I think she would and should come back after a season. But I would bring back Erica, Dorit, Sutton, and Bose. I guess I would bring back Jennifer as a friend. And that leaves 2 to 3 full-time slots open on this cast, which my dream scenario, which I don't think is that far off. I do think that Crystal has said that she wants to take more than one season off. It'd be too soon. Like every time she's been asked about it, she's like, dude, I just left. But I do think that it would be pretty amazing if we got Crystal and Tracy Tudor and one more new addition to the show. And maybe Crystal could be a friend. Maybe she didn't need to be full time. And maybe that third person is one of Crystal's former friends that wanted to be on the show but couldn't because of her husband. Maybe they finally get Robbie Williams' wife on the show, which is somebody they've been after for a while. Or maybe they do another kind of stunt casty type that people would get excited about. It would be this kind of quasi reboot where you bring somebody back, you add somebody that we're familiar with, you add a couple new faces. That's what's worked on OC. That's what's worked on Potomac. That's what's worked on Atlanta. That's kind of the formula right now that to revitalize a show. And I think a lot of people are kind of seeking that with Beverly Hills. And that's how I would do it. But regardless of who you bring in for those 2 to 3 kind of full-time spots, if you do what I suggested, either way, you tip the balance away from the Fox Force 5, which I think, again, what our people are craving. I think it's what the show needs. And you see what they're really made of. You test the Bose and Dorit friendship in the wake of that. You see how strong the Erica Dorit friendship is without Kyle there. You have Sutton, who would obviously latch on to Jennifer Tilly if you keep her as a friend, but also what direction does Sutton go in? You know what I mean? Does she go to the new ones? Does she try to really once and for all get in good with Erica or Dorit? I don't know. But that's the direction that I would take with Beverly Hills. I don't think you need to fire the whole cast and reboot it, but I do think there is some room to rejigger and refocus and sort of change the direction of the show. Okay, so this is a really specific question from Paul Kabak on Instagram. He asked, who do you think that Cynthia was talking about joining as a friend? And he mentioned a previous podcast episode. So I had Crystal Kung-Minkoff and Cynthia Bailey on the show about 2 months ago. They were there to promote their joint podcast, Humble Brag. And when talking about being a friend of, Cynthia said that somebody called her recently who was a longtime housewife who was asked to return as a friend to their franchise. She wouldn't say who. And Crystal said that she was excited about it, but it's a secret. So if you really go through the franchises, I guess, quickly, she must have been talking about a show that was actively casting 2 or 3 months ago. So in January or February. Probably that's OC, right? Because I don't think it's Jersey. That would feel too early for anything substantial like that. Salt Lake, I don't think so. Because also, who could they have returning? And I don't think anybody on there could be considered quote unquote long. I don't think Cynthia would call anybody long running. Miami, no, because that's already been filmed. Atlanta, no, because Cynthia was sort of talking about it as if it was another franchise. Potomac, I don't think so. Beverly Hills, I don't think so, because they weren't really in the throes of casting. They were still very much airing in the middle of their season. And then New York, I guess possibly, but who could that be? Like, would it be an OG returning to the reboot? I don't think that that's possible. So that brings us back to OC. And we do know who's on that season and that there is a former housewife returning as a friend, and that's Gretchen Rossi. So my guess is that Cynthia was talking about Gretchen and Gretchen called her to ask about it, which I don't even know if they were friends or not, but that's my educated guess. But I kind of hope it's somebody that I didn't think of and that would be a total surprise. Okay, Muhammad Yassin Alvi on Twitter also asked, why do you think Wes is telling everyone on Summer House that he wants to be in a better place with Sierra except for Sierra? Well, I think he's doing that because he isn't good at confrontation. I think that Wes also is not as concerned with Sierra's feelings and is more concerned with the public perception of it all. And also because Sierra, you know, rightfully so, I would say, has sort of nipped at him a couple of times, both in the, you know, in the reunion, at that dinner earlier in the season. So he's scared of that happening again. I think that he was sort of sent away with his tail between his legs and on 2 different occasions, and he hasn't really learned his lesson. And I think that the sort of safe move is to go to other people and to sort of test the waters that way and test the temperature. but I wish that he would just go directly to her. And the one time that he did go directly to her in her bedroom that one time after that dinner, it was kind of like a nothing burger. He didn't really say what he should have said. And he didn't really show understanding of her perspective. So I really wish that he would go to her directly. CG Murray 95 on Instagram asks, why did Jesse Solomon want to hide the toe sucking when it is clearly on camera? I just love that we have a toe sucking scandal. Like, come on, you can't make this shit up. So he said somewhere, I think it was the after show, that he was going to tell Lexi before the reunion. So I guess he thought that maybe this wouldn't air, but it's like, dude, you were in the house, aka somewhat on camera. So you knew that this was very likely going to end up on the show. You were telling people about it. Imra was in the room with you. Like, people were going to talk about this. So I don't know why he thought that he could get away with her not knowing about the toe sucking until just before the reunion, which, like, the show is already airing by the time you're filming the reunion. So that doesn't make sense to me. But I think he wanted to hide it so that he could finally be exclusive with her, and that means they would sleep together. I don't think it was like that overt in terms of like he only hid it from her so he could sleep with her. But I think that he omitted it because he knew that she would react. I mean, we know that we've gotten to know Lexi this season. Like, she is going to react to even small things. And even if you view the toe sucking as innocuous and as a joke, one, he was in there for 37 minutes. And I think people online think that it was not just his toe that got sucked. I do. I think that if it was more than that, Imral would have mentioned that. I think that they're sticking by the toe story, and I tend to believe it. Weird, but I believe it. But I think that he knew that Lexi would feel some type of way, so he didn't tell her. Same with the Sierra flirting thing. He was omitting these two things, and he even said on the after show it was a little devious of him not to bring these things up, but he didn't want to rock the boat, I guess. And I think that we're seeing Jesse really feeling torn between wanting to be like this good time boy who loves to party and hook up with girls, and, you know, he's kind of goofy, and also being like a solid potential partner for Lexi. I think that he genuinely does like her, but I also think that he likes partying and getting around and not being tied down more than he likes Lexi. It's kind of a rookie move that he, you know, left this out of his conversation with Lexi back in the city, knowing full well that it was on camera, thinking that, you know, it wasn't going to air. Like, that was obviously going to air, but he'll have to answer for it at the reunion. Fill it up 04 on Instagram. If the Summer House women defend Jesse Solomon, would you call them hypocrites compared to the Craig hate? And then he also said, do you think any of the Summer House women actually like Lexi, or will they defend Jesse? So I don't think the Southern Charm women are hypocrites for defending Craig by any means. I've been saying this whole time that it makes sense to me that the cast are defending their own teams. I really think that. So I don't think that the Southern Charm women are hypocrites for defending Craig. Now, would the Summer House women be hypocrites for defending Jesse? I wouldn't call them that, because they've known him for a full year longer than they've known Lexi, and he's completely ingrained in their cast. I think the Lexi and Jesse situation isn't comparable to the Craig and Paige situation. I think those are very different. I mean, first of all, those are very different lengths of relationships, but also the scenario is very different. But I also don't get the sense from the after show that they're completely leaving Lexi out to dry. Like, there's definitely a lot of Jesse defending going on, which I'm honestly not super bothered by for some reason. But as long as at the reunion, Lexi's perspective is shown and highlighted and acknowledged, and Jesse leading her on a little bit and love bombing her and then sort of making her look crazy is criticized, I'm good. Like, I don't need it to be a full bandwagon moment in either direction. Fill it up on Instagram also asks, why hasn't Paige been on Watch What Happens Live yet? Is that strategic for her or for Bravo? That's a great question, and I think it's strategic for her. I think Bravo would obviously want Paige to be on Watch What Happens Live. And so I think this is from her camp, and this is from her team and their decision. Even though I think that she would in some ways really benefit from being on Watch What Happens Live and thus being a little bit more open with her side of things, I also get the instinct to be more guarded and to save it for the reunion. You know, because she has already been opened up to so much criticism anytime she says anything about the Craig breakup, whether that's on the after show or sort of a throwaway comment on Giggly Squad or a comment on TikTok. You know, she's heard it from Craig lovers. And, you know, obviously Watch What Happens Live inevitably leads to shady moments and questions and headlines. And those things would incriminate her in the eyes of staunch Craig supporters. So, you know, sometimes silence is the best answer. Like, for example, Ariana didn't go on Watch What Happens Live until the very end of the Scandoval season of Vanderpump Rules. And so I could really see Paige waiting until after the final episode, after we see that pickup footage in the finale, to go on Watch What Happens Live and really kind of share her side of things. So yeah, I think it's strategic on the side of Paige, not on the side of Bravo, because they would definitely want her on there. Chico Farias on Instagram asked, does Lindsay still make sense on Summer House next season? We need a spinoff. Okay, so this is exactly what she got mad at West for saying that she does that she would not make sense on next season. But I personally don't think it's out of the realm of possibility for her to still be on the show. It probably wouldn't be every single weekend her going out to the house, but she has a supportive present baby daddy who could look after their daughter for a day or two every other weekend, or a nanny. You know, maybe we could just follow her life a little bit more in the city than we do now or than we do for others, just to have her still featured on the show when she's not going out on the weekends. And then perhaps also, like, there could be sort of a backdoor entry episode of her into Real Housewives of New York. I know she's been hanging out with Aaron Leachy a lot recently. Maybe they have like a coffee in the city with their daughters, and then that becomes Real Housewives of New York for Lindsay. I don't know. That's just a little, a boy can dream. You know, that's an idea. But Andy did insinuate on his radio show that he has brought up Lindsay's name in important meetings around Roni's. And then he said, I can't say anymore. So I don't know. I feel like the hints and vibes are there for it to potentially happen for her. Chico FBS on Twitter asks, do you think it would be a good idea to add some of the Martha's Vineyard cast to the original Summer House? So I'm not closed off to this by any means. And I definitely miss Summer House, Martha's Vineyard. And I'm sure there are a few that could work, but I would also just rather see that show brought back for a third season with the most promising cast members and then like filled out with new people, or just do another Winter House. And that's where we see the crossover. Because I think the moment that you start putting a bunch of Martha's Vineyard people onto the original Summer House, then that sort of signifies that Martha's Vineyard Summer House is no longer going to be a thing. And it's kind of, for me, it's kind of a slippery slope from there. And also, like, I don't think that those two groups overlap that much. I mean, I went to the Summer House Martha's Vineyard premiere party for season two last winter, and there was nobody from original Summer House there. We did see Jasmine and Silas at Carl's launch party for Soft Bar, which is fun to see in passing. But also, like, if people are saying that Lindsay shouldn't be on the show now that she has a kid, when she's like already a leader of this group, then I'm not sure that Jasmine and Silas would work on the show either. They have a son. So I don't know. Like, again, I'm not closed off to it. And I would love to see sort of like the support for that Summer House Martha's Vineyard cast. But I think I would just rather that show come back. You know, like, it's on pause, so who knows how long that pause is. I don't know. Is there someone in particular that you think would work? Because for me, there's nobody that's super obvious other than maybe Jordan. Fill it up 04 on Instagram also asked, Summer House and Southern Charm, which show has had higher highs? Compare both shows' best seasons. So my first inclination is to say that Summer House is peaking later in its run than Southern Charm did. Like, I think that we'll look back at seasons 7, 8, and 9 of Summer House and consider that to be sort of the glory days of this show. And I think that Southern Charm will always probably hold like this more special place in Bravo viewers' hearts because it premiered during what are largely considered like the glory days of the network back in the early 2010s when it was still early Housewives years. And, you know, we got introduced with Catherine and Thomas and Shep and Craig and Cam. Like, those were the days I think that people really think about with Southern Charm. And like, those subsequent seasons were pretty great. Like, I loved the addition of Chelsea. I loved the, you know, the Ashley years were pretty crazy. Like, those were great seasons of reality TV. Those were really, really strong seasons of reality TV. Such good mess. And then Summer House, I think, on the flip side, has obviously been a slower burn. Its early seasons were its worst. And I think it's been really integral in getting new young viewers into the network in recent years. And I think, just anecdotally speaking, it's the show that a lot of straight men that I know, whether it's my friends' boyfriends or husbands or things like that, this is the show that gets straight men hooked on Bravo now. So I guess that Southern Charm maybe had higher highs, but also I think it had lower lows. And I think truthfully, Southern Charm has not been amazing in at least like 5 years. Summer House, on the flip side, has been amazing for the past like 3 to 4 years, in my opinion. So yeah, they've in a lot of ways had opposite trajectories. And I think they've both also at the same time benefited from some of the crossover romances that were sort of incubated in Winterhouse. And I think I've mentioned this on the show or maybe on TikTok or something, where like, I really do think that Paige and Craig were sort of like, they were sort of like the ultimate example of like Winterhouse working, which is like two people from opposite shows getting together, which inherently lifted both other shows and the interest in those shows. And then they had this really like celebrated romance for years and years. And then they have this breakup that again increases interest in both shows as they're airing at the same time. Maybe I should do an episode on that and sort of like studying the Winterhouse experiment. But yeah, great question. Alexandra Pena Edmonds, hey friend, on Instagram asks, Sally can't be friends with Taylor Ann while dating Gaston. Now Taylor Ann is going to marry Gaston. Either get this mid-man on the show or get her off. My question is, what is your take on a possible shakeup next season for Southern Charm? Leva's gone. Rodrigo did not speak. Austin hates Craig. Vanita and JT drama seems fake or weird. Great, great question. And then similarly, Tiffany, aka DeGrayscale on Instagram asks, some Bravo account was posting a Zillow listing for Madison's house, and she was in the comments saying she's moving to LA. What's the tea? Is she going to go on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills? So about Madison, no, she is not moving to be on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. She's also not, she's not leaving Charleston. She said in an email to Bravo Daily Dish about getting a new house in Charleston. Let's just say it's exactly what we need. More space, more charm, and plenty of room for our family to grow. It's got everything we've wanted and then some, so get ready because y'all know I'll be making it perfect. And of course, I'll be sharing every step of the way, so stay tuned. Charleston is home and it's where we want to raise our children. I wouldn't trade it for anything. So no, Madison is staying put. They're clearly just upsizing to probably have more kids in the future in Charleston. And I think that her husband still works in LA. So I'm sure they have some sort of place there or something. But no, she's not leaving Charleston. And I agree. I don't think Taylor should be on the show anymore, honestly. I think that this past season was the season to play out the Sally and Gaston stuff as we were introduced to both of them. But clearly Taylor and Gaston didn't want to play ball in that realm, which when you're not ready for, which to me tells me you're not ready for the show and what it demands of you. That was like a love triangle, messy dating history on a platter. And we didn't get to see much of it, which is a complete disappointment to fans. And I just think it hammers home it reminds you that Taylor dated into the show via Shep, and I don't think it ever was really for her. I don't. So I'd be good if that was the end of her turn on Southern Charm. And I agree that they need to refocus this cast. It's hard because like the three main guys, Shep, Craig, and Austin, like they're getting girlfriends and they're kind of settling down a little bit more potentially. And, you know, I don't want their new girlfriends or new love interests to replace the women on the show again. So let's see. I think you keep Shep, Craig, and Austin. You keep Madison. You keep Molly and Sally because I think they're really promising. I'd love to follow their lives more. I find them really watchable. I think they're pretty good at reality TV. Follow their dating exploits outside of the cast. Maybe you add a guy for one of them to date. Vanita and JT, I'm not sure I need to follow that anymore, if I'm being honest. Like, I know I was really interested in the timeline, but at a certain point, I'm just sort of like, there's something just like weird about it and slightly inauthentic. I mean, I wouldn't mind keeping Vanita if her and Madison's friendship continues to like stay strong and we can hear more about that. And maybe we explore Craig and Vanita's tension. And even if you want to keep some of the other characters around, you have to make it very clear that they're friends of the cast. They're not main characters. Maybe they're even guests. I think that would clarify a lot, but I guess it's not completely necessary. And yeah, I guess there always have to be new people in Charleston to cast. And I do think this show is maybe in a different way from Summer House. It has to figure out what it looks like in sort of a new era. And I think what helps and hurts it, maybe helps it, is that Southern Hospitality exists, which is a spinoff, which is sort of what Southern Charm maybe used to be in some ways in terms of just like focusing on that age group and people who partied more. So if Southern Charm wants to sort of become like more like The Valley, where it focuses on that stage of life, I'd be okay with that, but it needs to commit. You know what I mean? That's the issue. I think it needs to commit one way or the other.
Does it ever feel like you're a marketing professional just
speaking into the void?
But with LinkedIn ads, you can know you're reaching the right decision makers, a network of 130 million of them, in fact. You can even target buyers by job title, industry, company, seniority, skills, and Did I say job title? See how you can avoid the void and reach the right buyers with LinkedIn ads. Spend $250 on your first campaign and get a free $250 credit for the next one. Get started at linkedin.com/campaign. Terms and conditions apply.
MaxJune3 on Instagram says, thoughts on the Vanderpump Villa trailer. So I just rewatched it. I only watched it one time. It looks better than season one. I didn't love season one. I didn't even finish it because I never was fully convinced by the casting for the staff. I didn't really have much interest in them and their stories. And I think part of it is that, like, it's hard to get invested in the storylines of these staff members when, you know, they're away from home. So we don't have any sort of anchor in terms of like where they're living and like their home life. And also we have new guests coming in every single week, which distract from those storylines. Is that how it feels when you watch Below Deck? Because I really don't watch Below Deck. So, but that show works more. So I don't really know. Maybe it's just a casting thing. I am excited for the Stassi factor. I'm excited to have her back on TV. I know a lot of people aren't, but I am. And whoever had the idea to bring the cast of The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives as guests on season two of Vanderpump Villa deserves a raise. Genius idea. I think the editing of the trailer that shows sort of like potential Marciano Demi stuff, I think that's probably a red herring and misleading editing, but it looks like a really fun crossover that will probably get me to watch season two of Vanderpump Villa, at least as a background show. Photo Gareth on Instagram says, will new Vanderpump Rules cast be able to overcome the uniqueness of the OGs? Will they be able to overcome that? Definitely not. Overcoming it? No. But can they do their own thing? Yeah. They're going to have inevitable comparisons, which is going to be tough for them because it's like, on the one hand, you have the brand name of Vanderpump Rules, which helps you to have a built-in viewership, I would say, like unlike Southern Hospitality, which really had to start from ground zero. On the flip side, having the Vanderpump Rules name is also kind of a burden because, again, you're going to be compared to that original run for the show, just like the Roni reboot. But I think the key for them is partially messaging, because I think the Roni messaging was off. The Roni reboot messaging was off. But also to not try to replicate what once was and just do your own thing. I really hope that whoever they cast for the show has a naturally overlapping social life. They have history. They date each other. They hook up with each other. That's what you hope for. You hope it doesn't feel like out of central casting. And so I don't think they'll overcome it, but they do. It's all about the direction of it. I'm cautiously optimistic, I guess. We don't really know much about it. And speaking of something we don't really know much about, Christine Rycroft on Instagram asks, what do you hear about Real Housewives of London? Any casting rumors or timeline? Hope we can watch it in the States. I also hope we can watch it in the States. It's not, as of now, an official Bravo show, but I sadly have nothing to report here. I haven't heard anything. It's kind of weird, but I kind of like that. It's kind of a mystery. Adam on Instagram asks, when will we get the Real Housewives of Miami trailer? A bunch of other people also asked about this. My educated guess would be next month, since it's rumored to be coming back in June. I'm guessing that it maybe replaces Summer House's slot on Wednesdays, because the Valley is about to replace the Beverly Hills slot on Tuesdays. So that's my guess for that, because Summer House usually ends around early June. And so if Miami's coming back around then, that would make sense to me. And again, I think I've said this, but I'm excited for Miami to be one of the only Housewives airing when it airs, because that's going to give it, I mean, when there's one Housewife airing, everybody wants to watch, everyone is kind of starving for Housewives, and that's going to give it a lot of eyeballs and a lot of attention, which is what fans have been clamoring for it to get in recent seasons. So it's going to be a good moment for Miami. I really think that. MaxJune3 asks on Instagram, which show should be rebooted? I would have said Ladies of London, but we're getting it as Housewives, which is essentially what Ladies of London was. So I'm excited for that. That to me is basically a reboot. And then I would love to see Dallas back at some point. I really would. I think that obviously that got overshadowed by some racism scandals on that show. But you know, there are some great moments on Dallas, and I think that there are some great finds on that cast too. So I would love to see Dallas at some point. Jasmine C. Wang on Instagram asks, I was wondering if you could ever do an episode on Asian representation on Bravo. I would love to do this. I think that would be a really great episode. But obviously, as a white person, I would definitely need the right partner or two to bring into that conversation and to help bring that to fruition, to facilitate that conversation. So any suggestions for who could be good to have on would be great to hear. So definitely DM me if you have any ideas of potential guests there that you would like to hear from. But there are definitely a lot of complicated figures and moments to talk about when it comes to Asian representation on Bravo. I mean, speaking of Dallas, Tiffany Moon's experience on that show in the aftermath of the Brandi Redmond scandal was really complex. Same with Jenny on Salt Lake City. She comes to mind as a pretty complicated moment for the network. So yeah, I think that would be a great episode, but I would need to figure out who to have on with me. Jenny Galwick on Threads asks, Bravo has had the Housewives format for forever, workplace and service industry format, vacation shows, the odd competition show. What would be your pitch for a totally new format? Oh, that's such a hard question. I honestly couldn't think of a new format, but I think it would be fucking fun and hilarious to have a Bravo like summer games of some sort, almost like that one Summer by Bravo commercial that was Olympic themed, but like an actual show. Like, I don't think it would be that serious. It would probably be just for fun, but I think people would get super into it. I think we would see a different side of some Bravo celebrities. And I also think it would be a really fun opportunity to feature some former people to come back in a pretty low stakes environment. And you could have like different judges, or you could have, I don't know, like it could be a fun thing to sort of do all summer, you know, and to have people whose shows aren't currently airing. I don't know. I think that would be kind of fun. I am very curious about the dating show format with Love Hotel. I've only heard good things about that, but I'm very curious about that. And then, you know, I really would love to see more Crappy Lake. Like, I don't know why we haven't gotten a second season of that show. It can't be that expensive to produce. Sony and Luann are TV magic together. But I would also watch it with different pairings too. So I kind of didn't really give you a new answer, but that's sort of where my mind landed for that. All right, just a few more questions. Pep with Maria on Instagram says, who is your Mount Rushmore of Housewives? Okay, that is like an impossible question. And I just had to Google to confirm that it's just four faces on Mount Rushmore. And I'm going to try to take my personal favoritism out of this and really think about what Mount Rushmore is. And so according to Google, the heads of the four United States presidents on Mount Rushmore, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Theodore Roosevelt, and Abraham Lincoln, were chosen to represent the nation's birth, growth, development, and preservation. So I would choose Vicki Gunvalson for the birth because she was technically first. She had such a long run, very influential, continues to sort of loom over the franchise. I would do Teresa for growth because the table flip really helped kickstart a growth period, I think, for Housewives beginning there. And she obviously, of course, is still very much a long-running housewife, is or was, unclear. I would do Nene Leakes for development because she really developed the mold and blueprint for humor on Housewives in a lot of ways for what it means to be a housewife. And then I would do Bethany for preservation because in addition to being that sort of development figure, when she came back to Roni, I think that she helped to preserve that show. I think she helped to preserve what Housewives meant. I think she was sort of driving that ship of that ensemble show for years. Delray Gabe asks, do you ever see a day where Housewives stops? How do I cope with impending doom? Okay, so ignore that feeling. Like, sometimes I feel like Housewives fans want the shows to fail, and which is something I will never, ever understand. Like, for example, the other day, Bravo released like some viewership data for the new season of Atlanta. And it was like, you know, across the first 7 days, like it's averaging XYZ number. And it was like a pretty great celebrated release. But then there was this contingent of people online who were like, oh, they're flubbing the numbers. Like they're doing 7 day stats versus like next day stats or blah, 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 blah. And it's like, okay, why can't we just celebrate the good thing? You know, like why does it? I don't understand that mentality at all. And maybe it's just because, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but like I am a pretty glass half full kind of person. And I think that Housewives is built to constantly reiterate and evolve and adapt. I think, you know, it already looks very different than it did 10 years ago, and it will continue to look different as it continues to evolve. And I think there will always be women who want to do this. And we are all way too deep as viewers to give up on it now. You know, behind the scenes wise, remind you that NBC is keeping Bravo in its portfolio as it splits off its cable networks. It's the only cable network under the NBCU portfolio that NBC is keeping with it as it spins off everything else, including MSNBC and CNBC. Like, that tells you a lot. That is a huge vote of confidence in Bravo's long-term viability and stability. And obviously, Real Housewives is very core to Bravo. And also, everything Bravo is very ingrained in Peacock too, which is the future of NBC programming as well. So I think you just have to remind yourself that like the franchises are not all going to be good at one time again. I think that's maybe the difference is like, I think that it's just going to be like, you have to take the good with the bad. You have to kind of sit through the worst seasons to get to the best seasons. I also think that Bravo, you know, they've learned from some of their missteps. Like I think the Roni reboot, even if they won't admit it, I think it was a misstep in terms of how you really rejigger a franchise. And I think they learned from that. And then they've shown that the new formula is the Real Housewives of Atlanta, the Real Housewives of OC, the Real Housewives of Potomac thing, where you sort of soft relaunch a show. And those were very successful. And they gave us people like Jen Badronti and Stacey Rush and Angela Oakley and Shamia Morton. Like, those people are very exciting to me. And I think that those people will continue to be discovered. So that's how I fight the doom, because I don't feel the doom. And I think that there's a lot of hope to be felt in the Housewives world. Okay, last question. John Conahan, what do you expect from or want from this year's BravoCon? See you there. Yes, see you there, John. I can't wait. I don't have anything booked and I have so much damn fucking travel this year with a bunch. I have 7 weddings this year, but I will find a way to be there. I will be there, no doubt. Maybe somebody would like to sponsor me or cover my plane ticket or a hotel. I'm kidding, but I'm also not. So if you're listening and you have any connects, let me fucking know. Yeah, no, I want to see panels that really talk about stuff. I think some of the panels at the last BravoCon were a little bit surface until they got to the fan questions. So let's really sink our teeth into the shows on the panels. I don't want to see fans overstepping with combative questions during the Q&As. Like, I think that's kind of lame. I also want to meet and see a bunch of fans and listeners. I love the crossover panels at these things. I love when we see people from different shows on stage together. I also want to see the Bravo creators and podcasters featured and uplifted, perhaps instead of some like the celebrity moderators they've been having in other years. Like, I think some of those celebrity moderators, they're great people and they're great, but like they don't really sink their teeth into the gig in the same way. And so I would love to see more Bravo creators and journalists and podcasters have those opportunities to perhaps moderate or be featured in some other way. And otherwise, like, I think it would be really fun to do some sort of like Bravo podcaster creator meetup or something where all of your favorite fan pages and podcasters sort of had a happy hour or something like that. That could be pretty fun. I don't know. Just the wheels are turning now. Anyway, that is it for the latest listener mailbag episode. Reminder that you can follow Gabbing with Gib on Instagram at Gabbing with Gib, on TikTok at Gabbing with Gib, youtube.com/@Gabbing with Gib. And to please give us a 5-star rating and review. It helps a lot. We love the positive reinforcement, not the negative 1-star reviews that criticize me for saying like too much. I am who I am. I'm never going to change. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, thank you so much for listening. And we'll be back again, I think twice this week. I think we're going to do a Married to Medicine end of season deep dive and then a Friday episode. So thanks again and have a great week. Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes. And subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gib Sonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.